Morning. Today's daf in the Avodah Zarah is Menhei. We start today with the Mishnah on Nindal Menveis. This Mishnah over here in the upcoming Gemara, which constitutes half of our daf today, is going to be a kind of like a transition, like a bridge between the last part of Avodah Zarah and the remaining section of the Masechta. The Mishnah, which we're going to encounter a little bit later this morning on Nunei Amud Aleph, is going to be really the beginning of the end of the Masechta. Admittedly a little bit strange because we still are in the fourth parak and we're not going to be moving from the fourth parak, and we're only going to be moving into the fifth parak sometime from now. So it is a little bit strange that we're making the shift now, meaning as opposed to in the beginning of the fifth parak, but okay, I'm sure Rabbi Yehuda Anasi had his reasons in terms of why he did that, why he inserted a new topic in the middle of the fourth parak, but okay. But we're going to be treat ourselves today to a really hard to call it a fun conversation. It's not fun, but really an interesting conversation regarding Avodah Zarah, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows Avodah Zarah into this world. It's philosophical issues. You already get that sense when you look at the beginning of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is basically a discussion. Well, it doesn't say clearly in the Mishnah, but when we open up with the Gemara, you're going to see that the philosophers asked the following from the Chachamim, from Chazal. So, okay, so you see that that this is really a question of Machshava, a question of us trying to understand the Kadosh Baruch Hu a little bit better. So that means to say now that we're done with Markulis and Baal Peor and all those forms of Avodah Zarah, Bittul Avodah Zarah, right? We basically now could put a bookmark in the Gemara right here on Daf Nunhei. And we're done. We're done discussing the actual Avodah Zarah itself. The next section coming up is going to be Yayin Nesach, Stam Yeinam. I know we kind of touched on it earlier, but keep in mind, what we really discussed earlier were the Gzera Derabana, meaning the rabbinic decrees vis-a-vis the Stam Yeinam, Aser Ba'achila, Aser Ba'ana, right? That was the second parak discussion of it from a Gzera Derabana standpoint. But in terms of Yayin Nesach as a Din Da'araisa, as an Issa Da'araisa, that hasn't been discussed yet, and we're going to be starting that discussion towards the end of today's daf. Okay.
Why is this a Mishnah? I mean, why isn't it just an Agat in the middle of
a... Right. Well, I mean, the Tanaim obviously discussed it, and they're the... and obviously, Rabbi Yehuda...
Agat in the middle of the...
No, I hear... We've had other Mishnayos in this Masechta, right? Ben's remembering well. We had other Mishnayos in this Masechta that touched on... philosophical topics in Avodah Zarah. Okay, it's a Mishnah, but it's a Mishnah. You're right, though. It's a Mishnah without a halachic point. Shalom says the Kedem. We start with the Mishnah. We're on Nun Dalam and Beis. Shalom says the Kedem. Barami im ein Ritzonim b'avosko chavim lama einam mevatla. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like Avodah Zarah, right? You get that impression. you read through the Pesukim in Chumash. You read Navi. And Nevi'im Rishonim, Sefer Shoftim. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not a fan of Avodah Zarah, and I'm saying that, and I'm being charitable, I'm being more than charitable. So they asked the Zakenim the following question, and that is, if he doesn't want it, so why doesn't he just get rid of it? Now, get rid of it, what does that mean, get rid of it? Meaning, this is not the discussion that is more popular, which is the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. That the Gemara discusses. We saw that Gemara back in Yuma. But over here, what we're discussing is the actual physical Avodah Zarah, meaning that we clearly, the humanity clearly has this interest in worshiping forces and deities and powers, so just get rid of them. So the Gemara says, Amar lahem, ilu l'davashin tzarech la'olam ba, hayu ovdim hayu mevatlo. Well, if there was anything that was unnecessary for the world, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be mevatlo. Now, that, in of itself, by the way, that's also interesting, meaning you would imagine that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world has a purpose. So what he's making reference to probably is like from our perception. Meaning from our perception, if we think it doesn't have a purpose, so then maybe we can even have an argument. We can even have a conversation. So, but you know that part of the things that people worship are the sun and the moon and the stars and the constellations. And so now Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy his world just because you have fools, you have ignorant people who are worshiping these things, meaning that Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to take away his world at the expense of, well, there are silly people out there who worship them. Amalem im ken yova davashin tzarach la'olam. So, bo. V'yaniach davashin tzarach la'olam bo. So, okay. So so they say to the chachamim, okay, but let's stay within your argument. So if there are things that are unnecessary, so why don't we get rid of the superfluous things of this world, so that at least it's less things to worship. Amalem af anu machzikim yidei avdehem shel elu shomim teidu shehin elahus. So the response to that question, and again, I could have heard a response of there's nothing superfluous in this world, but they don't give that answer. They give a different answer. Look, let's say HaKadosh Baruch Hu were to do that, and he get rid of things that are quote unquote unnecessary in this world. So the people now worshiping Avodah Zarah, so they're going to say to themselves, "You see, In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't get rid of the sun. He didn't get rid of the moon. Ah, you know why? Because there's a real power. There's a koach in the sun and the moon. So in order so that Kadosh Baruch Hu does not enable the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Kadosh Baruch Hu leaves everything intact. Those things which are quote-unquote necessary, those things which are quote-unquote unnecessary. We start with the Gemara, and the Gemara over here is going to pick up pretty much exactly where we left off. It's a Braisa, the Gemara cites it. You're going to hear a lot of the repeated discussions that we heard in the Mishnah, but we get a little bit more in this Braisa. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Shaluha Philosophim. So, as the Zakenim, so the philosophers were asking the Zakenim, Biromi, Im Eloheichem, Ein Ritzon of Avodas Kochavim, Neima Einim Avadla. So, why isn't your guy getting rid of Avodah Zarah? Amrulam, Ilu Davashen Olam Tzarech, Lo, Ayu Ovdin, Hare Hum Avadla, Hare, Hein Ovdin Lacham, Levan, Lakocham, Lamazalos, Yevad Olam, Imne Ashotim. So, pretty much the exact same exchange that we had in our Mishnah. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to do anything to his world. He's not going to corrupt his world and remove anything from the world just because you have foolish people worshiping them. The world is running on course. And as far as the people worshiping the Avodah Zarah, so they're going to have to give din b'cheshbon in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Dava Acher, the Gemara now is going to present this idea in a slightly different format. Harei shegazal. Now let's say you steal wheat. And you plant the wheat in the ground. Now, so what you just did is basically, you know, I'll use the expression, but not literally, but mitzvah ba'avera. Meaning that what you're now doing is that you're planting a seed of a grain that you stole. So really, if the world were just, if the world were fair, so should it grow? It shouldn't grow. In other words, you stole it. You took it away from somebody else. So Ella. But in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the world creating on a certain law. It's called nature. It's called natural law, natural law and order. And so it operates under this law. It doesn't deviate from this law. And as far as people are concerned, people are going to give din v'cheshbon in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Davar Acher, again, similar idea. Hare Sheba al Eshet Chaver dinu shol tetzaber. Ela olam kemenek noeg v'holech v'shotem shekir kol asidim l'tenes adin. Man has an adulterous relationship with another woman, so should she get pregnant from that relationship? No, she shouldn't get pregnant. Meaning there should be no reward from that act, there should be no positive benefit from that act. And meanwhile, she can get pregnant, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, again, the world operates on a certain law, on a certain natural law, and it's going to operate that way. And if she gets pregnant, she gets pregnant. As far as the two of them are concerned, achli tenas adin. Next example, v'hainu, no, sorry, not yet. And on this, Reish Lakish says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is how upset he gets over such a phenomenon. They make my seller, they make my coin. My coin over here means my imprint, it's a minting. Meaning, again, to the best of our understanding, we suggest an idea like this earlier in the Masechta. Meaning, we're made B'Tzal Malukim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not have a form. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a physical entity. There's nothing corporal about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but, in other words, from our perspective, from the way we understand it, we're made B'Tzal Malukim. Right? There's a certain image that we have that is in the manner of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when a person has an adulterous relationship with somebody else, so basically we're forcing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take his imprint and put it on a new neshama. So, but they're matriach me. In other words, they force me to do so. Against my will, I'm not going to be chosim. I'm not going to imprint this image on another human being, even though it's coming about through an adulterous relationship. Shal philosophist, the Gemara here now continues Echad Ezra Ben Gamliel. So a particular philosopher, Ezra Ben Gamliel, Kazav B'Torah Tzchem, Ki Hashem Elokechem Eish Achla, who? Kel Kana. Pasuk in Devarim says in the fourth parak that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Kel Kana. Now, Kana, Kone, can mean one of two things. It could be described as a person being jealous, Kina. It could also mean that he takes revenge. He's vengeful. So, at this point in time, even as you read the Pasuk, it's not perfectly clear what it means, but it will become clear to us in just a moment. So, the way the philosopher understands the Pasuk is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's jealous. So, Mibnei Ma Miskanei Ba'ovdeha Ve'ein Miskanei Ba. So, the people who are worshipping, no, I'm sorry, not jealous, sorry, other way around. Right now we're talking about being vengeful. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry with the people who worship the Avodah Zarah, but for some reason leaves the actual Avodah Zarah alone. Doesn't seem to be bothered by the Avodah Zarah. So, Amar Lo Am Shechal Mashlama Davidama. So Rabbi Gamliel says back to the philosopher here, let's try this by way of analogy. There was a king who had a son, and as far as the son was concerned, he had a dog, and named the dog after the same name of his father. Admittedly, not the most respectful action, but that's what he does. And then when he's angry, so he'll say, by the life of my dog, mentioning then the father's name, who koes, I'm sorry, kishishama ha-melech, amio koes, alavenu koes, o alakelahu koes. Now obviously, all this is extraordinarily insulting to the father. And the father hears now how the son is cursing the name of his dog, who happens to have the same name as him. So who's dad going to get angry with? Is dad going to get angry with the dog, or is dad going to get angry with his own kid? Havi omer, alavenu koes. Obviously, the one who has the das, the one who has the intellect, and the one who made these executive decisions, that's the son, it's not the dog. In other words, there's really no point in the father getting upset with the dog. Obviously, the father's going to get upset with the son. So when someone who opts into being Oved of Avodah Zarah, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to be angry with who? The Oved or the inanimate object that he's worshipping? So, Amar Lo, Kelev Ata Koreata, Valo Yesh Ba Mamish. So in other words, so now, basically, what Rabbi Gamliel did through his mashal is he compared the Avodah Zarah to a dog. The philosopher, so he got a little bit offended. And he says, what are you saying? Kalavata Koreasa? Ota, you're calling it a dog, the Avodah Zarah? Halei Yesh Ba Mamish. What do you mean? There's real power within the Avodah Zarah. So Amar Lo Mariita. So Rabbi Gamliel says to the philosopher, why do you say that? All right, on what basis do you imagine that it has power? So the philosopher said, well, let me tell you a story. There was a fire that broke out in the town, burned the entire town down. And meanwhile, as far as the one house that survived, that happened to be none other than the house of the Avodah Zarah, meaning that the statues were still fine, unaffected by the fire that hit every other part of the town. And you want to tell me it doesn't have a power? So Amalo Emshul Chamash Lamadav Adama. So Rabbi Gamliel says, "Well, let me explain that to you as well, and I'll do it via Mashal." Melch Basav Adan Shesar Chalav Medina. So there was a king where one of the provinces of the king rebelled against the king. Kishu Osa Mechama Imachaimu Osa Imamesimu Osa. So now the king is basically going to have to squash this rebellion, and so the king now is going to assemble an army and attack. Now, who's the king going to attack? The people in that town that are living, or the people in that town that are dead? Hari Omer, Imachayim Oseh. So, in other words, obviously, the people that he's going to be, the counter-revolution army is going to go to attack the people who are living, not the people who are dead. Kadosh Baruch Hu now has that fire going out through the city. The members of that city are being over to Avodah Zarah. Who is the Kadosh Baruch Hu now going to go to war against? The actual Avodah Zarah, or the people worshipping the Avodah Zarah? And so obviously now in this mashal, so now he's just describing the Avodah Zarah as being mesim. It's the dead people. Amar lo, kelev ata koreasa, mesa ata koreasa. So now the philosopher realizes that with every question that he's asking, so the Avodah Zarah is getting more and more and more discredited. And the comparisons are getting worse and worse, going from a dog, now down to a dead body. So im kain, ya'avdenam in olam. So the philosopher says, Rabbi Gamliel, well, If this is how you feel about the Avodah Zarah, if this is how Kadosh Baruch Hu feels about the Avodah Zarah, so get rid of it. Amar lo, ilo davar, she'en olam sarach lo, hayu ovdin, harei umevatla, harei hein ovdin, lecham, levana, lekochav, lemazos, laafikim, legeos, yevad olam, mimnei ha-shotim. So here comes the argument that we heard already once in the Mishnah, another time in the Brisa, another time now in this Brisa. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to destroy his world. The world operates the way it operates. There's a natural order to the world. And now, as far as the people who are worshipping the sun, I can't get rid of the sun, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The sun's necessary for the operation of the world. People are going to worship it. They're going to have to deal with that later on. V'cheinu omer. We turn to now the top of the Nehem and Aleph. Similarly, Asof Asof Kol Me'al Pnei Adama Nom Hashem. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost asking like in a question. Would I be able to remove everything up me'al pnei adama? So asof adam v'hema asof of shamayim v'dagei yam v'hamach shelos, that's the rishayim. So v'chim emesh rishayim nechshal mehem. Just because evil people are tripping, they're stumbling over these items, so I should get rid of them. Yavdenim in ha'olam v'alol la'adam hein ovdim. So v'chartis adam me'al pnei adama. Let's say people started worshipping people. Does that mean now, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that I should be destroying the people as well? Just because now they're the object of worship? Of course not. Meaning that wouldn't be fair to the people. Well, Kadosh Baruch Hu says the same thing is true with the world at large. I can't get rid of anything in the world at large just because people are worshiping them. Shal Agrippus Sar Hatzava is from Gamliel. Gemara quotes another Brisa. The Brisa over here has another exchange between Rabbi Gamliel and other people. This is Agrippus. Rashi over here points out that Agrippus is not Jewish. Right, it's interesting because we're going to meet a couple of people today who are debating, discussing, right? Some Rashi describes them as being not Jewish, some Rashi describes them as being Jewish, and maybe it's interesting. Maybe there are a couple of tells in the conversation itself that lead Rashi to this conclusion, or could be that just Rashi has other Gemaras that clearly identify whether it's Jew or not Jew. But in any event. Shall Agrippa start to vise from Gamaliel? So Agrippa asks from Gamaliel the following question. Here we go again. Kadosh Baruch Hu is a fire that consumes. He's a kelkana. The kina over here, klumet kane elachacham bechacham, v'gibber v'ashibasha. So here the word kina now is understood in the context of jealousy. In other words, that's the way Agrippa understands it. In other words, so Kadosh Baruch Hu now is jealous. Jealous, if I see another person who is really smart. And I fancy myself to be smart. So I'm going to look at him, I'm going to be a little bit intimidated by him, a little threatened by him, I'll be jealous. And if a person who is powerful sees another person who's powerful, so again, cause for jealousy. But if I see somebody who's not that smart, I'm not going to be jealous of that person. Rechmanus. But I'm not going to be jealous of him. By virtue of the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with Avodah Zarah is that he's jealous about the Avodah Zarah, kind of gives me the impression that she thinks there's something to it. So Amar Lo, from Gamaliel, turns to Agrippus and he says, no, Emshel Chamash Lamad Avadoma. So let me explain this to you. Adam Shenasi Isha Alishto Chashuva Mimenu. So Ein Mitkanaba. So let's say a man marries a second woman, in addition to the wife that he already has. And chashuva mimena. And it's a clear upgrade. Okay. I know. It's not our thinking. We don't do it. We don't think that. Okay, but anyway, clear upgrade. So ein mitkanaba. So the first one is not going to be jealous of the second one. But if the second wife that he introduces now into the family, into the household, is that someone who is now inferior, so now mitkanaba. So now the first one's going to be mikana. But mikana over here doesn't mean jealous. Mikana over here means angry. Meaning, look, right? I know, we're monogamous. We stay to one spouse, but at least, in theory, we can understand the point the Gemara's make. Meaning, okay, you're getting something better than me. Okay, I mean, again, to the best of the way, the best of the way we can understand. I get it. Okay, it's better than me. Right, she cooks better than me. Okay, fine. But in other words, if you're going to introduce another wife into this family, who can't do anything better than I can. It's quickly, it's clearly not an upgrade. Like, what are you doing? So in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he says that he's a Kel Kanai, it's not jealousy, it's anger. Meaning, kina over here does not mean, kina can go in one of two directions. Agrippa's understood it to mean as a form of jealousy. And what Rabbi Gamliel says, no, it's not jealousy, it's anger. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to humanity, in other words, you can worship me, or you're going to worship that? Meaning, what is that? Okay, it's anger. Amrlei Zunin l'Rabbi Akiva. Zunin says to Rabbi Akiva, Rashi over here, says that Zunin is a Jew. So Amrlei Zunin l'Rabbi Akiva. Libi v'lib chayada, davos gocham leis b'mashasha. So in a moment of honesty, and again, like I said, this could be one of those tells. That Zunin was a Jew. So between you and me, you and I both know that the Avodah Zarah, there's no mamashas to it. It's, what is it? It's, you know, it doesn't have anything that would demand us to worship it. V'aka chesina gavri da'azle ki mitabre v'asu ki mitzamde my time. And we see people when they're broken, right, and when they're broken, and they go to the Avodah Zarah, and they come out, and they're as healthy as anything. And I don't get it. So basically, how can it be that these items, statues, or whatever gets worshipped, how can they have any power? People go in, and people come out, and they're healed. Now, it's funny, I would give my 21st century answer. It's called the placebo effect, meaning that when you think something's going to heal, so... In other words, that does have a power to create some sort of therapy and some sort of remedy. But interesting though, Rabbi Akiva, he didn't have that kind of language. But Rabbi Akiva says no. So he says, So the Gemara says here. Let's try out another mashal for today. And the mashal goes like this: Adam Neman Shayabir. There was a person in town, and he was very trustworthy. He was a faithful individual. And he was so trusted and he was so honest that people would come over to him and deposit things by him and didn't feel the need to get Edom in order to do so because, quite frankly, he's not going to steal it. He'll give it back to me. And along comes one person and Hifka lo be'edim. And the one person says, you know what, I want to deposit this item to you and I'm going to do so in front of witnesses. And so even though the person had a sterling reputation and everyone else trusted him, so this one guy, okay, he didn't trust him. So Pam Echad Shachach. Now, there was one point in time where this person who was continually deposited things by him, and he did so with witnesses, one time he failed to get the witnesses. V'hifkeh etzlo shel abeidim. Amar lo ishto. So, the wife now of the trustworthy individual says, Bo v'nich barenu. So she made the following suggestion, and that is, well, let's deny it. Meaning, I know the rest of the town trusts you, and the rest of the town does not deposit items with you in front of witnesses, because they know you're trustworthy. This guy clearly doesn't trust you. And so now, we got him. Meaning, at a point in time now where this one time he deposited this item with you without witnesses, so here's a wonderful opportunity to take advantage of the situation. So, Amar La. So the husband says, "Sir, v'chim neneshe shota zeh asa shalok kahogen anu navida esam nasenu." So basically, my credit score. In other words, okay, you're right. We can take advantage of this one opportunity, but now I'm gonna take a hit on my credit score because I have one opportunity. In other words, you have to look at the long term versus the short term. Yeah, we may benefit this one time, but I'm gonna lose my credibility. So achkach yisurin b'shah shemishagrin osan ala adam mashbin osam shelo telchu ela biyamploni velo seitzu ela biyamploni. Look, Kadosh Baruch Hu sends an illness to a person, and with precision and timing, the illness is going to come at a certain time, and it's going to leave at a certain time. Uvishah plonis v'al yidei ploni, and it'll leave at such and such a time, and it'll leave with the help of this doctor. By the way, the Gemara over here seems very clear that in terms of the healing process, meaning it's so interesting, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu already dictated when the illness is going to go away, but at the very same time, it's expected that you're going to go to the doctor, and he, as a Shliach Hashem, is going to help you heal. It's fascinating. The Gemara does not take a doctor out of the equation. The doctor is clearly placed in the equation, even though it's really up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. But va'al yidei sam ploni in to this particular medication. Kevish yigiyaz manan latzeis. So halach zeh lebeis avodas kochavim. Amru yisurim dinu shelo netze. V'chos mer omrim v'chim in meish shoshot zeh osa shelo kohagen. Anu navid al shvu asenu. So look. There is, I gave a very clear prescribed time in terms of when the illness is going to come and when the illness is going to go. And now, just because this person decided, I'm not going to go to a doctor and I'm not going to daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu, in other words, I'll go to this Avodah Zarah. And now Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to change my plan and my itinerary just because this guy's foolish? No, I'm not going to do that. In other words, and even though it's going to give off the impression that the Avodah Zarah is what helped and cured him, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay. In other words, but look, in other words, I gave a decree, and just because of his particular behavior doesn't mean that I'm going to change my decree. Behind the Amar of Yochanan, my dechsev, and Rav Yochanan says, "Wait, look, let's take a look together at the pasuk. Pasuk toward the end of Sefer Devarim, the Chalaim Ra'im v'Ne'amanim. So, as part of the Tochacha, so Akash Baruch Hu says that I'm going to give you illnesses, Ra'im b'shlichusam v'Ne'amanim b'shvuasam." So when I send the illness to you, it's gonna come at a prescribed time. And at the same time, ne'emanim b'shvuasam. So, and at the same time, Akash Baruch Hu made a shvua that's also gonna leave at a certain time. And so, it's gonna come, and it's gonna go at the time that Akash Baruch Hu prescribes. You know, it's the classic bad news, good news, you know. But in other words, there is a refuah to the machla. Most of the time. So Amalei Rabba Bar Yitzchak Le Rav Yehuda. Ha'ika Beis Avodah Zarah Chavim Ba'ashrin. So there is an Avodah Zarah in our town. Dechim Mitzarech Amal Amitra. And I'm telling you, here's what happens. The community needs rain. Mischazilu Bechama. So the Avodah Zarah appears to members of the city. V'amalu Shachlu Ligavra Vaisu Mitra. And the Avodah Zarah says, in a dream, look, you want rain? Here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to do human sacrifice. Take one person in town, and, unfortunate individual whose numbers come up in the lottery, however they make these decisions, shech the individual, and you're going to get rain. Shechtu l'gavra v'asim mitra. And kachaya, that's how it happened. So Amar lei, hashta ihave shechivna. So to which, Rav Yehuda says back to Rav Bar Yitzchak, if I would have been dead, lo amr l'chul amilsa. And I never would have been able to answer you this question. Meaning, I'm so happy you asked this question while I'm still here on this earth. Amr Rav my dechsev. Rav Yehuda has the following mitzvah from Rav. Right? Rav Yehuda had two rebbeim. He had Rav and he had Shmuel. So he says that I have the following mitzvah from Rav. Asher chalak Hashem lokecha osam l'chol ha'amim. What does that mean? What is meant by the pasuk? So the word chalak, malamid shehechli kam bidvarim. So in other words, Kadosh Baruch Hu causes them to slip and fall. The word chalak sometimes can mean smooth, right? You're buying meat. And in Israel, so it could be called chalak, smooth. Okay, what we would call in Yiddish chalak. So malamid shehechli kam bidvarim, Kadosh Baruch Hu causes them to basically trip. In order to remove them from this world. Meaning, they already had a certain amount of behavior that was exhibited that they were over to Avodah Zarah. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu is basically going to give them more room to slip and fall. Okay, that's part of what a Kadosh Baruch Hu does. And Vahayna Dam Reish Lakish, and the Gemara quotes the same as Reish Lakish. We hear this number of times throughout Shas. So, I'm counting up the number. This is the fourth time in Shas the Gemara brings this down. So Balatame Poskinlo and Balatahir Misain or so. So if a person the Pasuk in Mishlei says that Im Laitsimhu Yalit, a Kadosh Baruch Hu, somebody's a scoffer, Kadosh Baruch Hu will say, okay, so I'll help you scoff. And La Navimi Tin Chain. And if a person wants to be an honor, a humble person, a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to help him as well. And Balatame, so if a person wants to become Tame, literally impure, but in this context just simply means if he wants to do Averos, and that's his interest and that's his intent, Poskhalo Kosh Baruch Hu opens the door for him in order to do so. and balatar. But if a person wants to become a more spiritual individual, a more careful about his relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, misayin so, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to help him out. By the way, just a nice contrast over here, meaning when a person wants to go off the derech, so Kadosh Baruch Hu's poskin lohi opens the door, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do anything positively to push you in that direction. He just simply gives you an opportunity to head in that direction. Right? There's a door is open, but in other words, but Kadosh Baruch Hu is not pushing you there. But meanwhile, when a person wants to be metayer, misayin oso. Kadosh Baruch Hu actively helps you to become a better person. So it's a nice contrast that Mita Tova is better than Mita Peronius. Okay, and that was a half an hour break from the Masechta. It's not a break from the Masechta, but in other words, it's a break between the previous section and the upcoming section. And so a little bit of machshav in terms of what Avodah Zarah is doing in this world, meaning the actual Avodah Zarah itself. How come HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not get rid of it? And other such philosophical questions. We start now the next Mishnah, we're in Nun Hey Mun Aleph, and now we really are getting to the finish line of the Masechta. In terms of Dafim, we still got more to go, right? The Daf, I think the Masechta goes to Ayin Hey, so that gives us another 20 blah, 3 weeks, 3 weeks left in this Masechta. In the upcoming Dafim, by the way, a lot of kashrus issues are going to be coming up, right? The Yerodea topics are on the horizon in the Masechta. Because even though it's Masechta Avodah Zarah, but we're going to be talking about Tarovus, we're going to be talking about mixtures, we're going to be talking about Bittul. In other words, the classic Yerodea discussions are based a lot on these Gemara's upcoming. The Gemara's discussion over here starts with the topic of Yayin Esach. So Yayin Esach is the main theme that is going to be the cornerstone that covers a lot of these topics. Okay. Just by way of introduction, in order to appreciate the Mishnah, so we have to know about a little bit of wine production. So I'm sure you did this years ago. So you go on wine tours. So and you get to see. Really, the truth of the matter is, to my memory, you don't get to see like a lot of the actual production and manufacture. You go out to the fields, you see the vines, you know, you see these big machines, but you know, you don't really get to see the processing. You're right. You see the beginning and you see the end, right? That's the way I view it as well. So you don't get to see a lot of the middle. So, but anyway, back in the day, so obviously wine production was the same, just without the machines. So without the machines now, so that meant that. I mean, when I say without the machines, by the way, motorized machines, obviously. You know, they use beams and boards and leveraging. And yeah, so in other words, okay, so it was still a machine, rudimentary as it may be. And so basically, let's just quickly familiarize ourselves with what they did. They harvested the grapes, they collected the grapes, and then they pressed the grapes into a pit in the ground. And so really the pressing of the grapes and the pit in the ground was done in two different stages. Stage number one is they basically with their feet, and I know it doesn't sound that pleasant, but let's say it was clean. So with their feet they stepped on the grapes and that created the first oozing out of the grapes. But the truth of the matter is, of course, is that in order to really press the grapes well, so they took this extraordinarily heavy beam and they put it down on the grapes for the press. Right, the pressing of the grapes, and that allowed now all the liquid to come out of the grapes and go into the hole in the ground. From the hole in the ground, they would let it sit there, ferment, and then they would collect it at a later point in time. What we're going to be discussing in the course of this Mishnah is going to be the various considerations that one has to have when manufacturing, when making the wine. So the Mishnah starts off with the following: Lochin gas beuta mino vikochavim. One is allowed to purchase from a non-Jew the vat together with the grapes. So this is where the grapes were stepped on the first time. So even though the grapes were stepped on this time, so one is allowed to purchase this from the non-Jew. Af al pi shu no tobiyado, and even though it's placed in the upper section of this vat, so v'nosein litapuach, Tapuch over here is literally an apple, but in this context it means the pile of grapes that are right directly under the beam. So that is where you're going to be finding this this first stage of wine production. Take a look at Rashi over here. Gaspa Uta, Rashi writes, Shiba'ata v'darchal v'kochavim. In other words, this was pressed by the non-Jew. So Shunota, Rashi writes, Anavim mitoch yayim ba'adashin shalgash shikorin mayis. Okay. V'nosin l'tapuach. Asifas gal anavim shetei akore kare tapuach uvala sak. So Rashi over here describes the tapuach is that big pile of grapes that are directly under the beam. V'kasavatani didan lo hava yayin esach ad sheri labor. Now, what's at issue over here is basically you're buying the grapes and the extraction of the grapes, and you're allowed to do so before it turns into yayin esach. And the question on the table basically is, when is it considered yayin? Meaning, at what point is it considered yayin? Because we know that once it's manufactured by a non-Jew, it's called yayin esach. Now, again, just to be technical over here, the terms stam yenem and yayin esach are perfectly interchangeable terms in this discussion, meaning, even if it wasn't actually used for avodah zarah, but it was handled by a non-Jew, so the term that we could use is yayin esach, even though more technically it's probably called stam yenem. And the point over here the Mishnah is making, at least according to the Mishnah, according to the author of the Mishnah, is that it's not called wine until it goes into the actual vat itself. So when the goyim are putting their feet on it and pressing it, even though liquid's coming out, and even though now it's been collected, aggregated, and placed under the beam, and the beam is putting pressure on it, still at this point in time, and there's liquid obviously coming out, still at this point in time, it's not considered yayin, and therefore it's not considered yayin esach, and therefore you could still purchase this from the non-Jew. V'eino ose yayin esach ad she'er labor. The Mishnah says quite clearly, like Rashi foreshadowed, that is that it's not considered yayin esach until it goes into the actual pit in the ground. Yarud labor, however, once the wine goes into the pit, masha babor aser v'ashar mutar. So anything in the pit itself is going to be aser, and if it touches the other wine, in other words, the wine has not yet entered into the pit, so that wine is going to be permitted, and l'chore will be permitted even to drink from that wine. Even though there was a communication between the wine that was in the pit and the wine that was about that. More to be discussed of that in tomorrow's daf. Dorchin, im ha'ovei kochavim. Okay, so step one of the Mishnah was talking about what can I purchase from a non-Jew at the from the vineyard. And basically, everything except for the wine that actually goes into the pit. In other words, the grapes and the oozing and any of the liquid prior to have gone into the pit, that's considered basically grape and grape product, but it's not considered wine, and it will not be considered wine until it goes into the actual pit itself. Continuing with the Mishnah. Yarud labor, Dorchin emal v'kocham v'gas. Let's say now you are a hired employee, and you were asked now to press on the grapes. Right? Basically, stamp on the grapes, do a little dance on the grapes. So, and you're doing so for hire. And now, the question is as follows. Meaning, you're going to be hired to do a job, so there is a number of considerations that you're going to be that you have to have. Meaning, if it's Yayin Nesach, so you know that Yayin Nesach is Asar B'Achila, and it's Asar B'Ana. You're not going to get benefit from Yayin Nesach. If you're doing a job creating Yayin Nesach, so basically what you're doing now is getting paid to make Yayin Nesach, but Yayin Nesach is Asar B'Ana. So that is obviously a consideration. So what the missionary is telling us is that because you're at the early stages where you're basically now at the press and you're pressing down on the grapes, as we learned in the first part of the Mishnah, it's not yet Yayin Nesach. Now obviously, in other words, and he's doing it together with the guy. So, but obviously it's going to go into the hole in the ground, it's going to go into the bore, and it will become Yayin Nesach, but you're getting paid for stepping on the grapes. It's stage one, step one, literally. So it's step one, and so therefore it's not at this point in time considered Yayin Esach, and therefore the Mishnah says you're allowed to hire yourself for this first stage of manufacture, because at this point in time it's not Yayin Esach. But here's what you can't do. It's odd. It's an odd part to the Mishnah, but hopefully we'll explain this. You can't be part of the harvest. That's weird. In other words, the harvesting obviously comes earlier. It's an earlier stage. That's in the vineyard, cutting the grapes from the vine. You can't do that. So it's really weird, meaning so when you're applying for the job, according to the Mishnah, of helping out on the vineyard, so can you harvest? No, I can't. Okay. Right?
It's an
Indian of tumor. I'll get to the explanation in just a moment. So, right, so can I harvest? No, I can't harvest with you. I'm really sorry. Okay? My religion doesn't allow it. Okay, fine. But can you step on the grapes with me? Yeah, that I could do. Okay. So, okay. In other words, if there's room for that in the employment, that's fine. And the obvious question is, why don't I do? I'll say I don't understand. We'll see the Rashi in just a moment. It seemingly doesn't make sense. Meaning, if you can already step on the press, so why can't you harvest out in the field? So let's take a look together at Rashi. Rashi explains of alabotzim lefishin osim begas tuma v'garim tuma hu shenisinasan legas l'shem dricha hu v'dricha sam tit am v'kodem dricha vadel amakabli tuma d'stamo lo hukshara v'haide kamal anabotzim legas hukshar hainu hecha de hukshar vaday v'kasavar asal legrom tuma l'chulun shebaret Yisrael. So Rashi explains. Because over here there's another consideration, meaning that obviously throughout most of this Mishnah, our primary concern and consideration is Yayin Esach. And that means to say that you can't benefit from Yayin Esach, you can't even hire yourself to work together with Yayin Esach, because that's also considered a benefit. But there's another consideration in this Mishnah, and that is that you're not allowed to cause food to become Tamei in Eretz Yisrael. When you're living in Eretz Yisrael, so everything should be done in a state of Tahara. Now, like we said already a number of times throughout Shas, there is no problem for you and me to eat food that's tummy. Meaning, outside of the base of Mikdash, we're not talking about Truma, we're not talking about Kohanim, just, you know, regular people in Eretz Yisrael, there would be no Isser per se to eat a food while it's in a state of Tumah. But, at the same time, however, in Eretz Yisrael, you do have Truma, you do have Kohanim, there is a base of Mikdash, everyone has to be Ola Larego. So to the best of our ability, what we try to do is we try to keep everything in a pristine state of Tahara, and we try not to be Matame anything. And you know that if a non-Jew is there at the moment when the grape can now be Mokshe L'Kabel Tuma, so by virtue of the fact that the non-Jew touches it, so he is Tame, albeit his Tuma is the Tuma de Rabbanan, and now when he touches the grape, so he's going to now make the grape Tame. And so therefore, if you're helping him at that stage of the game, at the harvest, so then what you're going to be doing is you're going to be gorim tuma l'chulim b'Eretz Yisrael. You're going to be causing food to become tameh in Eretz Yisrael, and that is an isser. Exactly how to categorize that isser, how to formulate that isser, where in the Torah does it say you can't do that? I wouldn't be able to point, but the idea I understand. And in Eretz Yisrael, we'd prefer everything to be in a state of tuma. Okay.
For Nesach, it's okay, even though you go to Nesach later on.
Right.
But Tumah, which is less of a, right, it's less of a
right.
Mission
I hear you. I'll just leave it at that. I hear your point. It's right. In other words, when you're stepping down on the grapes, that's going to become Yayin Nesach. Right. But it's not at this stage, and therefore it's okay. Okay, I hear you. Yisrael Shehu Oseh, B'tumah. If a Jew decides that he's going to be making his, he's out in the vineyard, and he's doing so b'tumah, in other words, this particular Jew does not seem to have any regard for tumah tahara, and he's doing so b'tumah. So lo dorchem v'lo botzer mimo. So here you're not allowed to do neither. You're not allowed to step on the grapes with him, you're not allowed to harvest together with him. So why are we being more machmer when it's a Jew? Rashi, over averahu hilka chafil dorchanami asar. So here, when it comes to the Jew, you can't even do dricha. Why? Shedricha samba avera because tamea. Because you know that you're going to be stepping down on the press, and the press also is tamei. V'dricha san hu ikar tum asam kishenas and mashke hein tamein ayde agas. And so now, what's going to be happening is that you're going to be transferring the tumah from the press itself, the press is a kli, from the press itself to the grapes and to the liquid that comes out. In other words, now you're aiding and abetting the isser of gram tumah. And that's why when it's a Jew, so you can't be part of any aspect of it. Not the harvesting, and not the pressing. But in other words, but when it comes to a guy, when you're pressing down, aren't you aiding and abetting? So interesting, Rashi writes, Misayeli de Avera is an issue when it comes to Jew to Jew, but when it comes to Jew to non-Jew, there is no issue of Misayeya, of aiding and abetting. Now, I'm going to try and make this point clear. Meaning, we know Lifnei Iver applies to Jew and non-Jew alike. Right? We saw that early in the Masech, we said that very clearly. In fact, when the Gemara gives the two primary examples of Lifnei Iver, so the two primary examples are always giving wine to a Nazir and giving an Eiver Menachai to a Ben Noach. Those are the examples that are always highlighted in the Gemara. Clearly, there's an issue of Lifnei Iver as it relates to a non-Jew. But Lifnei Iver is where he has no other means of getting the Isser, and I am now handing him the Isser. That's Lifnei Iver, applying to Jew and non-Jew. Misayeya means he could have done it without me. It just happens to be that I'm gonna help out, right? I'm aiding and I'm abetting. But in other words, it could have happened without me. This is what's called misayeya. This is, we'll put this on a level of a din derabanan, and when it comes to Jew to Jew, so then there's an issue of misayeya. When it comes to Jew and non-Jew, so there is no issue of misayeya. The Chachamim only made this geder only when it comes to Jew to Jew. Is the Yisrael Shu Osa Betuma? I'm sorry, Lo Dorchem Bartsanimo. Ava Malichin Imo Chavios Gas. But what you can do is you can take the empty barrels and you can move them to the vat. Umevin Imo Minagas, and you can bring it from the vat. Meaning, now that the wine has become tamei, so now it's done. And so if all you're doing is just schlepping the barrels, that's fine. Nachram shu osa betumah lo lashem v'lo orchin imo. And similarly says the Mishnah, if I have a baker, and he, again, is disregarding the laws of tumah, so for me too, to knead the dough with him, to arrange the dough, so then I cannot do it, because once again, I'm going to be aiding and abetting in the proliferation of tumah to food. But to move once the bread has been made already, and now it's already tummy, and now all I'm doing is schlepping, so the Mishnah says schlepping in of itself would be fine. Okay, so finished the discussion in the Gemara today regarding the philosophical discussion that takes place between Chachmei Yisrael and the philosophers, some Jews, some non-Jews, question of why is there avodah zarah in this world, why doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu get rid of it, and basically the simplest way to succinctly explain is natural order. Kadosh Baruch Hu created the laws of nature. Laws of nature do not change. People will make the mistakes that they make. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not changing the laws of nature. And then we opened up with the first Mishnah, talking about both aiding in the manufacture of wine when you're helping a non-Jew, when you're helping a Jew, baking together with a Jew. The concerns and considerations of the Mishnah is that when you are helping with a non-Jew, so you're going to be there's an issue of Yai Nesach, and you're not allowed to get benefit from Yai Nesach, so you can only be part of the manufacturer where you're not actually handling the Yai Nesach itself. Or there's the other consideration of Gram Tumah, is that if you're causing something to become Tameh, you're not allowed to be Gram Tumah to foods in Eretz Yisrael. By the Jew, there's another consideration of being Misayeya de Avera. That's why for the Jew, there's actually, you're more restricted in terms of what you can do in helping out on the vineyard and in the bakery, because there's also the other consideration of Misayeya de Avera.